Another of our first guidance features was the ex-ante assessment. And as I've said before, it was prepared simply because we got so many questions from managing authorities about how to deal with it, how to take it forward, whether it was necessary or not, so like Kenroy's question. And as we said, I mean, it's a legal obligation now, but actually, even more importantly, it's the tool that can help make this better decision basis, a decision-making basis. And the way we structured it follows more or less the structure we want to apply for all our guidance notes. So they won't be completely standardized because it's not possible. Also, you can understand we go through many stages with these, and including the member states sometimes ask us to do things a bit differently. But in general, what we try to do is, first of all, say, why have we got this requirement? So to explain a little bit the context. Secondly, to highlight some of the main points to look out for under this topic. Thirdly, any lessons learned, past experience. So it's what I said before, that we didn't have this as the compulsory feature of 2007-13. Fourthly, references, links to further useful information, which in this case is actually to the ex-ante assessment methodologies that you'll hear a little bit more about this afternoon in the other workshop. And then fifthly, and this is the most dynamic part, a live question and answers section, where we basically try and capture all the questions that have come in from member states and then provide the answers. And it's this part that we think will be updated the most, because obviously new questions come in. And some of the questions we've had, which this guidance notes covers, include, for example, the scope of the ex-ante assessment. So we've had questions saying, is it the same as the ex-ante evaluation of the program? And that's not a stupid question at all, because unfortunately in some language versions of the regulation, the word used is exactly the same. French, for example, Italian, Romanian, Czech, I think, was another one. It's not just the Romance language that I remember. So no, it's not the same as the ex-ante evaluation of the operational program. Does it have to be part of the operational program? No, it's a completely separate exercise. Is it the same as a Jeremy or a Jessica gap analysis? No, it goes much further. So, I mean, basically, I've given you lots of no's. The yes is that it's set out in 37.2. You have the elements there. And through the guidance, the methodologies that was produced by the Commission and EIB last year, you have checklists, you have methodologies, and so on. A couple of questions we've had also on the procedure. So can the managing authority do it, or do they have to outsource it? And the answer there is it's up to the managing authority, actually. What we've seen in practice is most of them are outsourcing it because it does require a certain level of expertise. So what we see is that most of the managing authorities have outsourced, but there's nothing in the regulation that says that you have to do that. You would need to make sure, though, of course, that there are the necessary Chinese walls between those doing the consultation, those doing the ex-ante assessment, and those making the decisions, obviously, on the project. It can be funded by technical assistance from the OP. That's another question we've had. Can we use technical assistance for this type of thing? And what about the monitoring committee? What role do they have? Well, they don't have to approve it, but they do have to see it, so it has to go to them for information. And also, in the interest of transparency, the conclusions, the findings have to be published within 3 months of the finalisation. And then finally, the question we've already had today, yes, it's always needed. There's one small difference for the SME initiative. There, an ex-ante assessment is needed, but it's already been done. Okay, so there's a derogation in the particular part of the rules on the SME initiative, which says that you don't need to do the ex-ante assessment that we talk about in our guidance fiche, because an ex-ante assessment has already been done at EU level. For other EU level instruments, you do still have to do an ex-ante assessment. So it's only the SME initiative which gives you that derogation. So I'm going to stop again now in case there are any questions.
Very good.
And then Hannah will take over.
Questions, please? Then I have one while you're thinking. Let's say I have an up and running financial instrument. Works well, everybody's happy. Why or do I at all have to do a new ex-ante or now that it's mandatory?
A very good question indeed. And yeah, I mean, first sight, one would say, indeed, why do you need to spend the time and go through this process? Well, precisely because we're talking about a new programming period, we're talking about new resources. And in fact, if it's an up and running and well running financial instrument, you know, one thing you would need to prove is that it does need some more resources. Maybe it's got resources coming back in, maybe it's got loans being repaid, and it can continue to finance itself. So that might be one aspect. Or maybe indeed it needs more, but how are you going to know how much more it needs? How are you going to know how it might need to be redimensioned or refocused? So it sounds nice and logical that you just give it a boost, but in fact, even in that case, or especially in that case, it would be important to see in advance whether it's logical, whether there's an evidence base to make a contribution to that or not. It might be seen by those on the ground as a further contribution, but in fact, it's new program resources. Similarly, I mean, if later on in the program the situation seems to have changed or you want to make further top-ups, there is a possibility to review the ex-ante assessment. But again, this important message of having always an evidence base for the decisions being taken is maintained, whatever the financial instrument.
Okay. Thank you.